Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the list in your boy at Fightful.com. With Jimmy Van and Sean Ross Sapp, they're on fire. Boom shakalaka.
200 strong.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp here. It is March 9th, 2022. This is the list in your boy on Fightful Wrestling, brought to you by NordVPN.com/Fightful. I'll tell you about that here in a minute. We got Jimmy Van here, but more importantly, let's disregard Jimmy Van. Let's disregard that guy. We've got former Impact World Champion, probably soon to be Impact World Champion again, re-signed with the company. Boy, we're going to talk about that. We got Josh Alexander. Josh, how you doing, man?
I am good, thank you. I was appreciating your little stat bars there in the intro. You're the money guy.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
And you're the shoes guy.
Yes. I'm glad that somebody, not a lot of people noticed that. Uh-huh. I put his shoes all the way down at the bottom because take a look over at what he's wearing on his feet. Let's take a look.
So I won't spend more than $20 on a pair of shoes. Well, that's just how I feel about it.
He's
the guy with like the custom made $1,000, you know, whatever. Yeah. I see you've got a bit of a shoe game yourself.
Well, my wife is really into shoes, so I can't get away with wearing lugs anymore.
Yeah, $20 lugs.
Lugs are nice. I like lugs just fine. But guys, leave a thumbs up. Donate a super chat or a humper chat to get your question read on the air. You might say, what the hell is a humper chat? Go to humperchats.com. That is our Streamlabs and PayPal platform, and it'll make sure you get your question or statement read on the air, even if it is to Joshua Alexander. This show brought to you by NordVPN.com/Fightful. You know, Josh goes back and forth between Canada and the U.S. an awful lot. Maybe he misses some of his favorite shows. I bet he's a big Euphoria guy. I bet he's like, let me keep up on what's up with Rue and the gang. Well, you know what? He might get region blocked depending on where he is. Not with NordVPN.com/Fightful. You can change your virtual location with just one click, and you can browse safely and securely. I mean, Gail Kim knows if she is anywhere near me, I'm going to hack her Wi-Fi and I'm going to find out all the scoops. That's just how it's going to happen. But if she used NordVPN.com/Fightful, I wouldn't already know that Impact was coming to Cincinnati in May. I wouldn't have already gotten that scoop, but I did. Sorry, Gail. Learn to live with it. You can also get 30-day money-back guarantees on NordVPN.com/Fightful. So if for some reason you don't like it, you can get your money back for free. It works on all of your devices. Check it out, NordVPN.com/Fightful.
Where's the really nice overlay that I made my team design for you?
Well, Jimmy, the real nice overlay is set for two people. Set for two people. Do you have to make a three-person one, Jimmy?
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're right.
Your money bar was all the way up to the top. You think I'm going to subcontract somebody to make one of those? Get real, Jimmy. NordVPN.com/Fightful. Josh Alexander, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
I would say you are. You got a new deal. That's interesting. Yeah, you worked a lot of people. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. I've heard that a few times.
You have, because I hit you up at one point and I said, listen, man, I'm not going to ask you to tell me because that puts you in a weird position, but nobody knows and nobody knew. And you pop back up at Impact. How did this all come about? Like, I had heard maybe there were some actual visa issues or something.
The visa stuff is like legitimately 100%. And like, I've seen people comment on it and say, you know, that was all a work too, just to make it like seem more legitimate. It was like most things in my career, just a circumstantial thing that happened to amplify this one thing, and it benefited it. But also, like, I would never cancel a booking ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's not in me to do. And I had to cancel two shows for that because like legitimate visa issues with, you know, lawyers and stuff. That's way over my pay grade. So yeah, that was unfortunate, but it all got handled now, and I'm back in the States. I have a new visa, and everything else. So
I had another journalist that hit me up. It might have been Jeff Hawkins even. He said, there's got to be something to this because Josh Alexander doesn't cancel bookings. And especially one like Terminus, it's like, man, that would have been, I would have loved to have seen you in that environment. So that was one of the things that made me go, oh shit, this is something really happening. I know there were people at Impact that went directly to Scott and they said, hey, what is going on here? Like they weren't sure what was going on. There were people that were surprised when you hit the ring as well. I mean, I know it wasn't like a malicious work the boys thing. It's just, you were in an uncertain situation. How was that, knowing that like you didn't know?
Well, in all fairness, like none of those people that you're talking about ever approached me.
That's amazing.
None of them ever asked me. Trey Miguel, he said he had no idea what was going on and all this other stuff. And I had heard he'd asked a few people what was going on, but he never came and asked me. I would have told him because I like Trey, yeah. We're friends, stuff like that. But, you know, it all just like... It was weird because like I wanted this to happen from the get-go. Like I knew I wanted to stay with Impact because like I'm clearly happy there. There's a lot of stuff going on there. I just want to wrestle. I don't care where I wrestle as long as I get to do what I do at the highest level and all this other stuff. And it all materialized and came together pretty quickly. And like the whole work of the whole thing was just that, you know, Impact has had this weird reputation of losing marquee talent time and time again. And me being a babyface and all this other stuff, I approached management and I said, if I'm staying, why don't we, you know, make a thing out of it that like I chose to stay at Impact because, you know, I probably could have gone somewhere else. I could have like gotten a job somewhere else, but I didn't want to. So I wanted to amplify that, not just for like me, but for like the whole brand of Impact and the fans.
I mean, you were getting name dropped on AEW programming. Did you have any heads up about that? Did you know that was coming?
I had no idea and all that stuff. Like I thought it was all like a big work between, you know, management and Impact. And like, they were just like, you know, helping each other out, trying to make things even more, but it all just like kind of like snowballed, like the Brandy thing happened and that was just them doing whatever they wanted to do. And then, you know, even Ethan Page working Christian, whose last match was against me 2.5 months ago, was this weird synergistic thing that happened. And it was all just, you know, happenstance, but it all amplified it even more.
So at that point, had you already, I assume you had already agreed to a deal like quite a while back?
Yeah, like we had agreed in principle and all this other stuff, and then when my contract expired, we'd agreed before, you know, I had a chance to talk to anybody else. So I knew where I wanted to stay. I knew what I wanted to do. It was just
and you've got, there's a lot of talent on different kind of deals and Impact. There are a lot of people that are on per appearance, like an exclusive paid per appearance. I like that they're willing to do what it takes to get talent now. And I think there's something to be said about that. I want to get to some of the questions that we have before we get to other news topics. JJ says, pump for Josh Alexander being on the show. One of my favorites. Was there any doubt in re-signing with Impact?
I would say there was like a 1% chance that I wasn't going to sign with Impact. Yeah, it just like my relationship with everybody there from management all the way to through the locker room. I feel like I'm a part of something that's growing and like on the ground floor, and we've all got room to grow together. So, you know, I'm a loyal person. I'm like a team player, as they would say. I've been that way my whole life with whatever group I'm in. And yeah, there was no doubt in my mind.
That 1% was you going, oh, I got to work with Gail Kim. Oh. Oh, Bryson says, no question yet. Wanted to say Josh is one of the most talented in-ring workers I've seen over the last decade. Now, your name is constantly mentioned among the most elite workers in the world. And I mean, it was sort of a bubbling under thing for a while. Now it's like widely recognized. How does that feel to get that recognition for something you've clearly put tons of work, blood, sweat, and tears into?
I would say it means everything to me. I flew under the radar for so long and I worked so hard at this, and like my personality is just like, I might have like ADD or something. I can't focus on very much of anything. Same. But when I do find that one thing that I can become obsessed with, I become a perfectionist at it. And wrestling has been that way since like the first time I stepped in a ring. And I've never been like this merch guy. I've never been this guy that's chasing fame and followers and all this other stuff to grow my brand. But like, I've always really been obsessed with being the best at whatever I can do in the ring and like giving the fans exactly what they want or even more and going above and beyond. So like now that, you know, the secret's kind of out there that I'm one of those guys and regarded with like some of the people that I look up to, like the John Grishams and all these people, is like the best wrestlers in the world, that like it's humbling. It's awesome.
Love John Gresham. Anytime he posts like one of his tutorials on YouTube, I immediately like grab my wife and I'm like, hey, I got to try something. Got to try something. She dreads the uploads. We've got a couple of statements too. Alan says, welcome to Fightful. Thank you for coming back with Impact. Watched the show Saturday and loved it. There was a ton of good wrestling this weekend. Malika is glad to see you re-sign and shouts out me for long-term storytelling with Punk. CM Punk did unblock me on Twitter this week, guys, even though he said he wouldn't at the scrum. But I think he realized that I didn't do anything to him, so we're good now. Chuck just sent a super chat, but Kyle says, Twitter conversation inspired wrestler for Josh. Do you view yourself as a wrestler, an entertainer, or both? Do you see any differences in them, and what would those be?
In my heart, I'm a wrestler, I would say, through and through. That's what I'm comfortable with and all this other stuff. But like, I think to a certain aspect to get to the level I'm at now, you have to be a little bit of both, at least. And certainly you could just be an entertainer and get pretty far. Like you look at the Logan Pauls and all these other people that make a living and are able to like jump in and out of our world and stuff like that. And they're just entertainers. But in my heart, I'm a wrestler.
And Ian says, was there when Josh first came to Unit 13 at LLWA to trained with and ref lots of your first matches back then. And I'm very proud to say so. You've come a long way and deserve all your success. Keep it up, man. Like we got people
cool.
Popping up from your, we got the ghost of Christmas past popping up from Josh Alexander here.
Those are dark days.
And Nails says, can we talk about the immense support and he gets from Jade, how good Jet is his wrestling moves and the egomaniacs always supporting Josh. I mean, Jade, of course, not just a big supporter of you. She supports so much of what Impact does. There's a lot of stuff that popped up on my radar from Impact because Jade has tweeted it out.
Yeah, yeah. She's made it a thing to just like live tweet every show, yes. Every chance she get. Cause like she's watching it along with Jet. Jet's obsessed with wrestling and Impact Wrestling. So, you know, it's all pretty easy for her, but she loves it.
And Van Twinblade says, hi, Josh. I'd like to ask you to come back to Glory Pro and yeet Paco around the building like a basketball. Everyone go watch the first match he did with Mike Outlaw. It was fire. Any chance that we see you back there? I mean, I remember you posting on Twitter, and we talked about it off the air. You were considering a relocation to the States that would make that probably more plausible.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm open for bookings in America right now. I have a visa, and with my new deal at Impact, I'm able to fill whatever time I have free outside of their taping schedule. So I could definitely see myself going back to Glory Pro and everywhere else, even if I don't relocate to America, because that won't be happening until later this year, if ever.
Guys, reminder, you get in your super chats and humper chats. Jimmy Van, we have some other wrestling news to talk about this week. I mean, it's been a loaded week. Like WrestleMania is in full swing. Impact had a great show on Saturday. You've got AEW Revolution on Sunday. It's been an absolutely loaded week. Chuck says, any idea if we're going to get annual tournaments at Impact? I missed the Bound for Glory series. Do you have any insight on that?
I have no insight. You have more insight on Impact news than I do, for sure. So
I did tell you. Off the air, just so people know, off the air, Sean was reciting like upcoming Impact dates to Josh.
Yeah, I was putting them in my phone.
Well, listen, Gail Kim's got to get on that NordVPN.com/Fightful. What's she thinking? What's she thinking? I'm just, I just hack into that Wi-Fi, no problem. But topics to discuss on the news perspective, Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, I got more stuff I want to ask Josh about himself. The first thing that I wanted to do, you talked about being a dad. You got two little kids. I told you out there, I got two little kids. I saw a video on your Twitter. And I went ahead and scooped that video. I want to see if Hayden can play that for a second. Hayden, can you play that video?
Weighing 270 pounds.
270 pounds?
Walking rapping. Oh.
Oh, so when that happened, I remember commenting on that. And I was like, man, he took after Moose there. He did that in front of your family with your family watching.
He has no remorse either. He's one of the stiffest kids I've ever
seen. You think?
Well, I wanted to ask you, what's it like being a dad, juggling parenthood with wrestling, especially when your wife is also involved in the business?
I mean, it's much easier because my wife is and was involved with the business. So she understands what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and all this other stuff. Where I've had several like relationships in the past where my significant other had no understanding of what I was doing. She thought like it was all for nothing.
Right.
And I was just wasting my time. So, you know, that makes it all easier. And then, you know, she's a super mom. So that much, that gives me a lot of help with the two kids, but it's just, it was hard when I had a full-time job as well as wrestling every weekend and traveling nonstop because there was no days off. But now from Monday to Thursday, usually I'm, you know, at home with my kids and
it's nice
to do all that stuff and spend even more time with them. So
yeah,
you know, it's definitely challenging, but it's definitely easier now.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you a question about standing out on the independent scene. So I was telling you off the air, I used to promote shows back 2000, 2002. And back then, the Attitude Era was still going on. Like, wrestling was still really, really hot. You broke in, I think, 05?
Yeah.
Is that right? So wrestling was kind of cooling off a bit at the time. And when I was doing shows, you had WWE, you had WCW, you had ECW. A lot of people were breaking into the business. When you got in, like I said, things were cooling off a bit, and you no longer had WCW, and you no longer had ECW, how did you get noticed? How did you make yourself stand out? Especially since I imagine there were probably less shows going on, smaller crowds at that time. Like, how were you able to make yourself stand out and get noticed?
Well, it was a lot of trial and error. I don't think I stood out and got noticed for probably the first 5 to 7 years of my wrestling career. I would say around 2012 is when I started like getting a little bit of momentum. But, you know, when all that shut down, WCW and ECW and all the other stuff, like you were saying, like we had my generation, that 2005 generation, had the Ring of Honors and the Impact Wrestling and all this other stuff to look up to. So we had something else. And like that style, much because of like Low-Key and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, all these guys, they were doing things that you never saw in ECW and WCW. So they revolutionized the business and changed it. We were all just trying to like learn and catch up on the go in 2005. And it certainly changed because in like 2012, 10, 12, like that's when social media really became a part of wrestling too, to help get noticed. So you started seeing people getting noticed for different reasons, for what they were doing in the ring or for traveling and all this other stuff. So you just like, I had to find my niche, and my niche was always just stick to the wrestling, stick to what you're good at, and like make that like the reason why people want to buy a ticket to see me.
Right. More than,
you know, merch, social media, all this other stuff.
And I got to mention this, Sean. So we have a running gag on this podcast where we have the Fightful Championship belt sitting right over there. And the running gag is that Sean Ross Sapp has never been able to capture the Fightful. He's holding the replica.
This is heavy.
That's the real deal. So look at this, Sean Ross Sapp. You were never able to capture the Fightful Championship belt.
Listen.
Look at Josh Alexander.
I'm going to call my friend RJ City, and he's going to kick your ass.
My ass?
Yeah, probably not, actually. He'll probably hand you a cup of coffee and say something sarcastic to you, so.
When we're done, I'm going to have to grab a photo of you with that.
That's legit.
Just for fun. Yeah. Wildcat made that.
Oh, okay. So super legit.
Yeah.
he also has replicas of my head made as well.
I don't know where the hell it is, but we do have it somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's behind the chair. Yeah, I'll show it to you.
Oh, unreal. Unreal. Obsessed with my face. So one of the things that's changed about Impact Wrestling of late is now that we are getting a little bit safer in the public eye, so to speak, with the pandemic, the taping schedule has accelerated significantly, because for a while it was once every 6 to 8 weeks, maybe. Now you guys are at least 2 times a month going to tapings. How has that adjustment been for you, especially coming in and out of Canada, which I understand is a pretty big headache right now?
Well, the traveling thing, I found my own little like kind of loopholes of traveling. So I fly exclusively from Buffalo. I don't do any international flights because it's just a nightmare. But like I'm traveling weekly, so it's pretty easy to drive across land borders for me, at least with a visa. But the taping schedule, accelerating all that stuff, traveling around, getting in front of new crowds and different markets and stuff like that, like that's what pretty much the entire locker room's been itching for so long. Even pre-COVID, like we were going to, we had like a steady schedule of going to the same towns for like about a year or two pre-COVID. And now coming out of it, like we're going, like we just came back, I wasn't there, but they went to New Orleans, and like that was like a market we've never been to, and all this other stuff. And it's just, it's cool to see like the company investing in trying to make it grow a little bit more and stuff like that, get us in front of more crowds, and like just get to see new and different people that want to see Impact Wrestling. Cause like, I think our fan base is very loyal as far as like wrestling fans go and stuff like that. So if we can get out in front of them and make it easier for them to see us, it's only going to benefit us.
And selfishly, as I was mentioning off the air, I'm not going to reveal what dates I've heard of in the future, but you all were in Louisville this past week. You've got Cincinnati that I reported soon. I'm probably going to see you guys in Dallas a little bit, but specifically the Louisville, Cincinnati area, like selfishly, and then Nashville is a regular spot. Like wrestling around here for a while just wasn't that high profile. Nobody wanted to come to Kentucky because of the commission and all the stuff around it. So I'm pretty happy about that. I get to drive to see you guys work and all that. I get to bug Ross Foreman to let me interview you guys, which is always fun. But when you think about places in the States that you want to return to after the pandemic, is there any certain one that you're like, man, that's a market I would like to go to now that my profile has increased to see how things work there?
I haven't really thought about it. I've wanted to get out more on the West Coast because I haven't really cemented my name out there at all, you know, other than doing some PWG stuff way back when. I've done like a couple of Defies since, but like I've really not been, I'm a big Midwest guy as I have been for most of my independent career. So I would like to get out to the West Coast, but I haven't really thought about it, man. I'm always pleasantly surprised with all these towns we go to when my music hits and I come out and people are just like happy to see me. Like there's a certain amount of imposter syndrome that still plagues me because of it. So it's just cool.
Actually, I want to ask you about Japan, because I saw that somebody asked you on Twitter in January, who are your dream opponents still left to face? And your answer was the entire country of Japan.
it's tough to say, man. Like I'm such a big fan of like what New Japan's done in the last kind of decade, and like Noah over the past 20 years, and you know, going back to like the All Japan stuff back in the 90s and 80s. But like I've just never been to Japan, and every time I wrestle anybody that's like had a good career over there, they go, oh yeah, you know, such and such, like I've been there. I'm like, I've never been there. And they go, what? And they all freak out. I'm like, I know. Like
so. In the last 2 years, it's been impossible to go over there.
They're
not bringing anybody over, which is wild. Alan asked, if you still keep in touch with Ethan Page, love to see the North as a one-off.
North as a one-off. I mean, we keep in touch, but like he's doing one thing in AEW. I'm doing another thing in Impact Wrestling. We're both super busy outside of that. We both have two kids each.
Dan Lambert brainwashed him.
Yeah.
KE775 asks me if I got any feedback to Vince's interview from Wrestlers Officials. Josh, did you see his interview with Pat McAfee or hear anything about it?
Of course I watched it. It was super entertaining.
Yeah.
It was insightful as well.
Yeah, so I've been collecting sort of backstage reactions to it. I should have something up this weekend on Fightful Select. But yes, and it was all positive that I heard from. Like, nobody that I talked to in WWE was burying him for anything, because quite honestly, that's the longest a lot of these people have seen him speak in a row. Like, a lot of these people don't get FaceTime with Vince McMahon that often. So it was just as fascinating for a lot of them. JJ says, talking about touring, Impact has always been big quite here in the UK. Any plans to come back in the near future? I'm sure they do have plans to come back. I mean, the product of where we are in the world, it isn't easy, though.
Yeah, I've been asked that question thousands of times over the past 3 years. And, you know, we do have a big fan base out there. We would like to go, but it's just whenever it can happen.
So, Jimmy, we've got some news topics, among which Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, so he accepted the invite, and I was going to ask you this. So you were talking about how, you know, WWE wanted to get a match out of Steve Austin at WrestleMania. I saw the promo that Austin cut, because even though Kevin Owens has set it up like it's going to be a promo segment at the KO show, Austin alluded to, it's been 19 years since I've had a match. So my question for you is, again, Sean Rossat being the investigative journalist, right? What's the latest you're hearing about Stone Cold?
They wanted him to do a match. They want when I heard about this story, first off, when people said, oh, the big story's breaking today, I thought they meant Cody a few weeks ago. And they're like, oh, no, it's Austin coming back. And I'm like, say what? And it's one of those things. It was the same feeling I got like when people told me CM Punk was coming back. I was like, shut the fuck up. No, he's not. He ain't doing anything like that. And when I heard that they were trying to get him for a match, I had two thoughts. One, how after this long, because they couldn't get him for CM Punk 10 years ago. They couldn't get him for John Cena. What changed now? Well, then I thought about the amount of money that was being passed out to guys like Owens and Styles. And it's like, well, if they're giving those guys that much money, you got to imagine they're paying an insane amount to get Steve Austin. Over the last couple of weeks, it was far less sure that it'd be a match. But you could tell by the tone in which Steve Austin took that that was the implication. Because he said, call it a match, call it a fight, call it whatever you want. And to me, it's his way, and this is me assuming his motivations, which is not something you should take for gospel. I think it's his way of saying, like, I'm going to kick your ass. It's not going to be a ring the bell, 1, 2, 3 type of thing. Because I think that he takes a lot of pride in what his last match was. And, I mean, 2 years later, they tried to have him come back and work a match with Jonathan Coachman, of all people. And he said, no, I'm not doing that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Austin kick Kevin Owens' ass, hit him with a stunner, and then, like, count to three himself type of thing. Like, I could see that happening as well. But it was definitely there. First off, I heard there were some issues with prep time and things like that. But I also know this is something that they were pushing for as far back as January.
And I want to ask you this because you've had some neck issues before, right? And Austin now is, how old is he, Sean? Early 50s, Stone Cold.
He'd be 57. Maybe mid 50s. He's 57. Jesus, he was 57. Born in 64.
What do you think about Austin doing anything physical 19 years after he last had a match? History and neck issues, almost 60 years old. What do you think?
I think if it's a one-off, he'll be fine. I think there's ways to work around it. I think like Kevin Owens and him are super professional and all this other stuff. So there's bells and whistles they can do to make it all very entertaining and make it very safe. But I hope I get to see it happen because I'm a huge Stone Cold fan. Like, that's the reason I got into pro wrestling.
So. Is it really? Yeah. He was the guy.
He was the one guy when my mom brought home a magazine and Stone Cold versus Shawn Michaels with Mike Tyson on the cover.
Yeah.
Like, who's this guy?
Awesome. Awesome.
Uh-oh. Look who's in the chat. Jade says she couldn't race home quick enough. What did I miss? He buried you on the air. Buried you. Said that you sicked your child on him for a brutal assault. You were back there managing him, and then all of a sudden the attack came through. We welcome Jade into the chat. What a fantastic Twitter follow as well. But man, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And again, it was one of those things. Like, Josh, I don't know if I've mentioned this to you. When I got the news of CM Punk, like, I'm connected well in the sports agent world. But there's one specifically who, when he'd get off the phone with me, would be a big smartass. And he'd be like, hey, did you hear? The Undertaker's going to win the Cruiserweight title. And then he'd, like, hang up. And then we ended a call, and he's like, no, but really, check on CM Punk to AEW. And I was like, yeah, sure, buddy. Sure, buddy. Just like you told me Hulk Hogan was going to wrestle Grayson Waller last week. Sure, I bet. And then I had some more people follow up with the Stone Cold thing that came together so quick. I was kind of shocked, and it felt like the kind of thing that WWE wanted out there a little bit, so to speak. Like, I got a pretty quick confirmation that that was a working plan, but, have you ever worked with Kevin Owens? Did you all do much together?
Well, I wouldn't say we did a lot, but I worked with him on the Canadian Independence. There's a company named C4 out of Ottawa where I wrestled him a couple times. And I got to work with him then right before pretty much he went to WWE. But, Stone Cold, I find it so unbelievable. But, you know, I forget that he retired so young. Like, his run wasn't that long. So, like, when he says there's 19 years between, like, the trilogy of The Rock and now, I'm just like, it blows my mind.
I mean, his run was like 5 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, because he had a full year plus off. He had almost all of 2000, and then he missed, like, effectively when he took his ball and went home. That was his career. He had like two or three matches when he came back. So his ascent through WWE and then his retirement happened over the course of a few years. And like, we're talking about him retiring at 37, 38 years old, which is unheard of these days, unless you can't physically go, which at that point he said that he probably shouldn't physically go. I mean, he was almost not in that match at WrestleMania 19 as well. Like, if you go back and listen to that, it's just mind-blowing to see the age in which that guy retired with how successful he was and what could have been. I mean, even Shawn Michaels, like, my God, he missed those 4 years, and he said he probably could have come back sooner. He was so young. He was mid-30s at that point. It's just, it's always wild to see that. What other news you got, Jimmy?
Well, I want to ask you your thoughts on this Ring of Honor news, because you got a background with Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. So Tony Khan announced last Wednesday on Dynamite they've acquired Ring of Honor. And Sean, I'm going to ask you in a minute, because apparently he plans to book shows, which is a mistake if he doesn't delegate, my opinion. But what were your thoughts, given your history with Ring of Honor?
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tony Khan acquiring the company.
From everything I've heard over the past like couple of years, is Tony Khan was an enormous Ring of Honor fan. Like, and you can tell, like, the guys that, you know, he hires and stuff like that, that he must be a huge fan of the Ring of Honor days and stuff like that, and early Impact. From my interactions with him, he was like a big TNA fan. But the Ring of Honor side, I think it's like good that like, he bought the tape library and he bought like all the intellectual property. Is mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. so? He owns everything. Like, I think it's good that it's in the hands of somebody that actually enjoyed the product rather than just selling it off to somebody that's going to put it on an app. Like,
it's exactly what Punk said.
That is what Punk said.
Yeah.
He said that he wanted his footage to belong to a wrestling fan and not to somebody who would put it on a shitty tab on a shitty app that wouldn't work. Yeah, that's what he said. And Tony Khan did say to us, I thought that his comparison was apt, and I thought it was really good. He asked the room full of reporters which NXT they preferred, the original or 2.0, and we all said NXT. Then he said, which do you think is more conducive to Vince McMahon's vision of what a wrestler is and what he wants out of talent? And we all said 2.0. And he said, well, there you go. He's like, I preferred the original NXT, but I see why they changed it to 2.0. Because why are you going to just create a bunch of people that you're not going to do anything with, eventually release, and then Tony's going to capitalize off of what you had built the last couple of years with these NXT talent? Why not just go ahead and streamline the process and build more towards what you're going to do? He hinted that that was going to be sort of the method, that he was going to have a place where he could provide an area for people to work that could eventually become AEW stars. And he indicated that he wanted them to work kind of both of them. And I mean, if you're going to do that, why not have William Regal around? I think he knows a little bit. I mean, the joke is, Josh, that NXT is AEW developmental, not WWE developmental, because they've created so many people that are now big stars there. Why not get the guy that helped do that? What were your thoughts when you heard about William Regal going to AEW?
I wasn't shocked at all. I mean, I've only had minimal interaction with William Regal over the years doing like WWE stuff pre-shows, but like, you can tell he loves wrestling. Like, this is his business. This is everything to him. So he's going to find a job in it, and he's very good at it. So any company would be lucky to have him, clearly. But my hope is that he does run Ring of Honor shows, because I think a lot of these guys that are like, they're hamstrung into like the position on Dark, they don't have a lot of time on Dark to put together matches that are longer than like 6 or 7 minutes. Whereas you run a Ring of Honor show and you highlight, I don't know, like a Jungle Boy or something like that, he can have a 20-minute main event with somebody, and, you know, he's going to learn the reps more that he can apply later on when he's a top guy in AEW.
And I mean, they've got a guy in Jonathan Gresham who, man, what a supreme talent that guy is. And I know he's been throughout Impact as well, but I would be shocked if he didn't end up doing like an AEW ROH hybrid type of deal there. I mean, that would make an awful lot of sense to me. But Jimmy, you mentioned him needing to delegate. I agree. I think with all his responsibilities, he should. I think he's got a lot of good resources as well. Like, I think Matt Hardy can become his like Pat Patterson, like his finish guy, another idea guy. Mm-hmm. But he had mentioned at the scrum that like, he has been writing Rampage and Dynamite, like just kind of booking himself for like 20 years. like 20 years he's been writing storylines out.
I mean, it's like I told you before, when I saw that photo of him on the sidelines, I think at a Jaguars game, mm-hmm. and he's got the clipboard with AEW matches on it.
Yes.
Like, I really think that he's stretching himself too thin, and he's got more than enough, you know, smart minds around him that he needs to delegate. Have you heard anything about a Ring of Honor? Because he said he wanted to book Ring of Honor. Have you heard anything Correct. About he wants to do a weekly thing? Maybe it's going to be just like a rebrand of Dark. Like, have you heard anything about what the plan might be?
No, because I think it's too early right now. Like, they don't even know what they're doing with Honor Club yet. So, yeah. I full stop. I asked him today, when can I start pestering you about ROH stuff? And he said, soon enough. So, hopefully I'll be able to pester him about that. But
Josh, I want to ask you something about William Regal. Because, again, I was doing some Twitter research this morning. And you posted on Twitter one time, Regal told you that you looked young, like you'd never been in a fight.
Yeah.
What was that about?
What?
Yeah, he did. He posted that.
So this was in like 2012 or 2013 when I just first broke into the American indie scene. I got called to do Columbus and Detroit for Raw and SmackDown. When I showed up to Columbus for Raw, Jake Something was the only person I knew that was there. And there was two other guys that were just from like Minnesota or something else that I've never seen since. But Jake has pretty much looked that way his entire life. He's been missing a tooth. You know, he just looks like a caveman. So William Regal was giving us this huge speech about how I think he used Bryan Danielson as an example, Daniel Bryan or whatever, that this guy can do anything. Like, he's good looking, but he can be gritty. He can be violent. He can be funny. He can do all this stuff. And he was like, this is the perfect guy, that a utility guy you can put in anything. And this is before Daniel Bryan blew up to be like the biggest thing in pro wrestling. But then he looked at me and he goes, you're a pretty boy. You know, I had like spiky blonde hair. I couldn't grow a beard back then. I was wearing a singlet. I looked like a varsity club guy.
Yeah. You had a bandana on, I think, or something. I remember, saw the picture. Yeah.
Not the WWE. I didn't wear the bandana.
Oh, okay.
Anyway. And he's just like, yeah, you know, you just need to look like you've been in a few fights. Like, this guy's ugly. He looks like he fought a war with his face. And Jake's just like, what? You know what I mean? Like, he's happy to hear it. So, but yeah, I since applied that through indie wrestling, bleeding every single show or every match I've had since, pretty much, breaking every bone in my body. So,
sort of on the same topic as William Regal, Impact just brought on Lance Storm. I've learned a ton just talking to Lance Storm. I've talked to him an awful lot lately, and they're like there's plenty of stuff that I disagree with him about, but then like he'll tell me his point of view on it. I'm like, shit, you're right. That makes a lot more sense the way that you laid it out. How has that been for you? Have you had the opportunity to work with him much? Because I know that that's kind of when you were heading for your little break.
Yeah, he came in as I left. So the only interaction we had was after I debuted at Sacrifice this weekend. And, you know, he had to go off to do gut check. So sure. we have yet to work together. We did work together the one time he did his agent kind of tryout with Impact, yeah. maybe 2.5 years ago before he went to WWE. But like I think we gel perfectly together. We're very sarcastic. We're very dry, and we seem to get along. But I grew up reading his blogs back in the day.
Yes.
With
blogs, oh yeah, yeah.
On my cell phone while I was at work, when there was no other form of media for me, and I learned so much just reading his blogs. So I look forward to working with him.
I told him he needs to turn his Twitter persona into a character where he comes out during X Division matches and he's like, unsafe. It's unsafe. And he's managing a guy. He's like, slap on a good chin lock. Put the hooks in.
Yeah. When
grounded.
When he tweeted that, I read it. I didn't comment on it or say anything to him, but I just went, man, if he thinks that's unsafe, wait till you see half the stuff these guys are doing these days.
I know. I know. And I mean, there's so many people that I love. And like, I love that they put Steve Macklin in the X Division for a while, because I thought that he was like, if you put Prime Rhino in the X Division, I thought that was such a great contrast. And I thought it was a really good approach. The X Division is one of the things that made me love TNA back in the day, too. So, and the funny thing is, Lance Storm doing a lot of the athletic stuff that he did was one of the things that drew me to him, like going standing and basically doing the box jump to the top rope and turning around in the clothesline, which not exactly as high risk as some of the other stuff. But, man, that guy's got an awful lot of knowledge as well. What do you think about Gut Check, like that being back?
I was a fan of it, like younger, watching Impact and TNA and stuff like that. And I just like the Tough Enoughs and the Gut Checks and all that stuff.
Oh, me too.
And, I like now I have a different perspective on it because like I know a lot of these guys that are just hungry for an opportunity and stuff like that. Like I know Jason Hotch and all these other guys that are like busting their ass in the indies trying to get noticed. And I think like to a certain extent, like maybe it's too soon for them to be put on television. You know what I mean? As good as they are and as like as much as you know of a prospect they are and stuff like that. Like it's gonna take time for them to become like a valuable part of the show, but like it's a great foot in the door and it's a great way to get their name out there and it'll help them get more bookings on the indies and stuff like that. So I just think it's a cool little thing. I'm a competitive guy, so I like seeing people compete over stuff.
I would imagine by the time Tough Enough was on the air, you had probably decided that you wanted to be like in wrestling, right?
Well, it was about the time that I was like, maybe this could be a thing. But then I watched that and I was like, there's no way I could do this.
Really? Because like I would watch it and I'd be like, oh, that's how you bump. That's how you hit the ropes. And I was like fascinated by that. Were you like breaking down the individual things like, okay, that's how you do this. That's how you do this. And what made you say that you couldn't do it?
Well, the thing that made me say I couldn't do it was like Al Snow making people vomit doing push-ups in the sand and stuff like that. Like it just looked like they made it boot camp. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was never an athlete. My entire life, I was a fat kid. So
it's wild to imagine.
Yeah. It seems so impossible. But, you know, I would break down wrestling matches my entire life, like you were just describing. Like, I'd watch Eddie Guerrero do a belly to back suplex. I'd be like, why does that look so much more devastating than anybody else doing that move? And I'd break down exactly what he was doing. So now I try to apply that when I do it and stuff like that. But
the old elevator drop on it, he just goes up and then right down. I love that's one of my favorite moves in the world. Ian Hunter said, shout out to the hacker, Scotty O'Shea. Weren't there, is that the same hacker that you booked, or is that a different Jimmy?
I used to promote a different hacker. Yeah. His real name was Josh. Last name escapes me.
This hacker actually contacted him and asked him for if he could use his gimmick.
Okay. His blessing. So you know the other hacker, you know what?
Yeah, he's like come in and out of like seeing shows.
Yeah, okay,
okay. He's actually like a very successful IT guy, which means the gimmick.
Yeah, he worked at BlackBerry, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
I remember. Do you know Danger Boy, Derek Wilde?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah, he trained him, yeah.
The original hacker is no longer around because he couldn't get around NordVPN.com/Fightful. It was just too good. Too good. He couldn't do it. I love how familiar so many of the people are that work the Canadian scene are with one another.
You know who Chris Van Vliet is?
Yes.
So we met Chris in Vegas a couple of years ago, and him and I are just talking because he's from Pickering, I think. And he said, yeah, I was living in the dorm and I heard that one of the guys on my floor was getting into wrestling. So I wanted to go with him to training. It was Cody. I had no idea. And then we're rhyming off people that we know. We knew a lot of the same people in the business, but I never met him until then.
I met Chris in 2012 when he was like an anchor for a local news station in Cleveland. And he just showed up to an indie show. And like, I had no idea he was from Canada when he talked to me that
right.
time. Like, there's this weird, like 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
That man has been all over the continent. He's lived in Cincinnati. He's lived on the Kentucky side. He's lived in Cleveland. I think Miami, now LA, Canada. Like he is all over the place.
It is true that for some reason we all know each other. Like I dropped a couple names on Josh, like Dane Jarrus as an example. I never thought you'd know who that is. You know what I mean?
Well, they all dabble in independent wrestling when they want to get their fix every few
years. Right. Yeah. I have not yet.
JJ says, what was your reaction when Kenny first appeared on Impact? And what did you think of the AEW relationship? It seems to have cooled off a lot. I mean, it seemed to have cooled off completely as of now. But what was your reaction when Kenny showed up?
I thought it was cool. Like, I was a huge fan of Kenny. And I think anybody that is a pro wrestler should be a huge fan of, you know, what he's able to do in a ring. So it can only highlight us by having matches with him and, like, competing. Even though, you know, we weren't winning or anything like that, but you know, the relationship, I thought it was good for what it was. I thought we could have gone over there to highlight some of our guys, but that never really materialized, which was disappointing. But you know,
I was actually going to bring that up to you. So was there talk of that happening?
There was talk of me going pre-Bound for Glory and just being in the audience, maybe for like a, this is the guy challenging Christian at Bound for Glory,
right?
But I think Christian like hurt his shoulder or something, or is written off TV because of something and around that time, so it never happened.
That's interesting. I'd never even heard that. Like, I mean, there were plenty of
surprised.
I'm shocked. I knew something he didn't know.
I haven't heard that. I'm fascinated by all that because I mean, I know that, that Britt and Deanna push to wrestle each other an awful lot because they're buddies. But that's not one I had heard. That's really fascinating stuff. So Nails in NY says Creative Pro just announced Josh is coming to Long Island. Losing my mind. Yay. Creative Pro is, man, they're churning out star after star after star right now. They've got a great school.
Yeah. Brian Myers might be the best trainer in all of pro wrestling now based on what he produces. So
he's such an entertaining interview too. But I mean, like we're talking like Max Caster, MJF, Chris Statlander. Not only that, it seems like he's got this good balance of in-ring and personality that he's training these people with as well, because MJF and Max Caster are two of the top personalities on AEW.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I always talk to him about it. I ask him like how, like I'm like, did you see what Max did? And he's like, oh my God, he's killing it. Like he's like, just use Max as like the measuring stick for the guys he's trained. And then, but then
yeah,
even Chris Statlander's no slouch either. And stuff right. Like that. Like,
what about Destiny Pro? Because I don't hear as much about, you know, who the top dogs are in terms of Canada now when it comes to training and promotions. But, you know, it seems like they're doing some pretty good things.
The show, like Destiny is just an independent wrestling show.
But they do training as
Battle
well.
Battle Arts is the,
oh, Battle
the
Arts,
training
yeah.
center.
Yeah, yeah.
If we're talking about, like, schools that have produced, like, the guys that have been, like, successful independently, I would say, like, Superkick in Toronto has probably produced more students in the past 5 years than anybody.
We actually have a girl training there right now, a girl that works for us.
Yeah, you have like this weird balance for like trainees where like you can train them to be the best wrestler possible, but if they don't want to get in a car and drive to a show and take a booking for $50,
right?
You know what I mean? They're never going to build their name and all this other stuff. So like I think like whether it's Superkick got lucky with like the students they have being so dedicated, or they just hammer that into them that that's what you got to do to be successful, and other schools aren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it, but yeah. Yeah, Battle Arts is a really good training center, stuff like that, headed up by Santino Morella. And, you know, it's the top-notch facility. It's like he tried to make it a PC of the North
kind of looking
thing. And, you know, they have a lot of students there. It's just some of those students don't want to travel. They just want to get straight to their tryout for WWE.
Okay.
I love that they combined, like, it's pro wrestling, jiu-jitsu, MMA, a little bit of everything there, because, I mean, so much of it goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you got a show March 26th, I think it is, against John Morrison.
Yes, I do. That
is you ever worked him before?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about that one?
I mean, I'm excited. I've always been a fan of John Morrison. He's like, I think we've almost wrestled each other a couple times, and it's just hasn't happened for whatever reason. So, you know,
right.
It's cool that it's going to get to happen. Destiny, over the past like 4 or 5 years, has been, I would say it's the premier promotion in all of Canada. Just for the main events it puts on and stuff like that. Like I wrestled Pete Dunne when he was WWE UK champion in a main event for that show and stuff like that. So,
right. And Bianca's side, what do you think about that?
Who?
Bianca, Santino's daughter.
Oh, yeah. Santino's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome. Like that's what I mean. Like that's the formula for that school. That school is like, they want to get your foot in the door and get you signed to be a WWE superstar. So like, that's where you go. If that's what you want to do, if you want to be an independent wrestler and grind and, you know, maybe not make it,
right.
You're going to go through a different avenue. But.
Right.
We have a super chat. Chuck says, Josh, would you like to face Samoa Joe in Impact? Any idea if Impact could bring him in? I can tell you guys off the air. Josh said, I'm not facing that jabroni. He's like, I've got no desire to face that loser.
Should I leave it at that just for the headline?
That's what he wants. Yeah.
He buried Samoa Joe and said, I hope we don't sign him. Ugh. You have wrestled him before.
Yeah, I've wrestled Samoa Joe a couple of times. Actually beat him. I was one of the only people that beat him in that whole run he had in the independents between, you know, Impact and WWE. But it was fun. It was awesome.
You won. I remember you won the AAW title. It was him and Eddie Kingston. I just remember that because you had faced him like the month before, and I feel like it went to. I feel like it was.
He choked me out, but I passed out.
Yeah. A non-tap. Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't a tap out. And then that you did the triple threat. I want to say the next month, because I was pumped for that match. And that was around the time where Samoa Joe was becoming available. And WWE was like, yeah, sure, work these other places. Then he popped up in Ring of Honor, and they're like, no, let's get you under a contract, pal. Let's get that happening. So that was a very unique period. You caught him in a very specific window.
Yeah, yeah, I was super fortunate to be like the guy that AEW wanted to like build around. And unfortunately, at that time, I broke my neck. So, you know, it didn't really – snowball like they wanted it to with my career. But I was very fortunate to be able to get in the ring with him because, like I said earlier, like he's one of my heroes, one of the reasons I got into all of pro wrestling. So.
And I know you still work a lot of AEW. You had like a 20-minute match with Mike Bennett recently, who I think he's showing a lot of people what he can do because he got unfairly typecast in WWE for like a lot of those angles. And now he's going out and having these crazy matches that are showing people. But you've also wrestled like Ruby Soho. It's such a mixed bag of what you might face. Like one month it might be Mance Warner, or one night if like you got a tournament going on or something. I mean, how has that been? Because all over the map, your opponent's there.
I mean, I embrace the chaos of it all. Yeah. Like that one, the Jim Lynham tournament, I wrestled Mance Warner, Daniel Garcia, Matt Fitchett, and somebody else, Myron Reed. So yeah. Like you're talking about like four almost completely different types of wrestlers and all that stuff. And like, you have no time to talk. So like,
yes.
I think that's when the pressure goes on pro wrestlers. And that's when you really learn if you can do this, like without talking about it and pre-planning and doing all that stuff. So like me and Daniel Garcia, we talked for all of 2 seconds. It was just like, I'll tombstone you out of a sleeper hold. And he was just like, what else? I'm like, let's just chain wrestle and see what happens. And it was like one of the best matches either of us like could think we could have, you know what I mean? It was so much fun.
Did I hear that right? Did he say Ruby Soho? You wrestled Ruby Soho?
Yes, I wrestled Ruby Soho in a return match. It was like 6 years to the day at AEW. She had come up in AEW before she went off to WWE and stuff like that. So she requested me, which was like super, you know, humbling and cool. And
so what are your thoughts on intergender wrestling? Like how was it intergender wrestling?
It was a good 20, 25 minutes too. It was a hell of a match.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was funny because like when I said we're going to go at least 20 minutes, she was like, I think I've only max gone 6 minutes for the last 6 years. So
wow.
We'll see how this goes. You know what I mean? But like she trusted me and like, yeah. I have so much trust for her. She was my first match back from when I broke my neck. So we've built this trust over the years knowing each other, but intergender wrestling, I think, like anything in wrestling, if it's done right, it's awesome.
Right.
I just think that, like, you know, you can overplay your hand with a lot of things and a lot of tricks you have. And so some people aren't very successful at it. And like, for me, I've probably had 6 or 7 and probably 5 of them were all terrible.
Is that right?
I've learned those lessons through trial and error now. So me and Ruby was like, I said it was probably one of the best matches I've ever had storytelling wise.
Right.
So,
and you got that win back, brother.
Yeah,
you got that win back. You mentioned the Jim Lynham tournament too. I mean, to kind of highlight that again, you mentioned Mance, Myron, Garcia, Matt Fitchett, and Garcia. But you were in another one, the one that you won a couple years ago, and it was Eddie Kingston, Myron Reed, Colt Cabana, Jake something. Those four couldn't be more unlike one another, and like that. That is, I think that is awesome. I think that's, especially on the indies, that's a great thing to do. The styles clash, the opponents are varied. I mean, that's every week you're wrestling somebody different with a different skill set that you're not usually seeing them at tapings all the time.
Yeah, and that's like the journeyman perspective of this. That's where you take pride in the being a wrestler portion of this job and stuff like that. Because the guys I looked up to, I felt like they could have a good match with anybody. So
yeah,
like I got to apply myself and try to do that too, right?
You had mentioned Regal talking to you about something. What kind was that, for like extra work in WWE? What extra work did you do for them?
I did, like, it was just extra work. Like, they didn't use me for any backstage segments or security, okay, or anything like that. But with the Monday Night Raw, you basically just sit there and you talk, and Regal talks to you about like what the job is and what you have to do and what you're lacking. And that's where he told me I would look like a pretty boy and Jake was ugly, so he has a better chance of getting a job. But then on SmackDown, it was the night that Sheamus and Mark Henry, I think, were doing like an arm wrestling off in the ring.
Those draw on YouTube, man. Like, it's insane when they do arm wrestling stuff. They get like 30 million views on it. It's unreal.
Okay, so we're all standing in our gear beside the ring, and Triple H is in the ring going over this arm wrestling thing with like Arn Anderson. Everybody on the roster has circled the ring, watching them go over this segment and try to like put it together properly. And Regal just goes up and goes, "Hey, Hunter, can you guys get out of the ring so these guys can have their 4-minute match?" And he like looks at us, and I'm just like, I'm like a, f- like, I couldn't have felt more like a piece of shit when he looked at me. Like, and they just like lift this giant contraption for the arm wrestling thing out of the ring. And then Regal goes, okay, you're up 4 minutes. And like me and Jake something went in and had a match. And it was the most stressful thing I've ever been through in my life. But like, I'm thankful for it because now anything that happens, like it's definitely less stressful than that, less pressure than that. Right. So
interesting.
Couple of comments. Nail says Kylie Rae broke his nose, right? Or at least busted it. And Jade chimes in with, I've lost count of how many people busted his nose, Jet included.
It's not hard to break my nose.
I've got the deviated septum. Like I got to get that fixed. Like, do you deal with that at all? Cause if you get your nose busted repeatedly, I mean like that's almost like a foregone conclusion.
I've had the deviated septum surgery, the thing already. And now it's just like, it breaks in the middle and it's just cartilage. So I'm sure it'll be like the size of my fist by the time I'm 50. But
what was the recovery like for the deviated septum surgery?
I think I couldn't work out for, they said like 3 weeks, and I waited a week and then I wrestled 2 weeks later. So doctors are just like, they just offer suggestions.
Yeah. That's just suggestions. Jimmy, what else you got? We're about to wrap up this main show.
So I wanted to bring up the Madison Square Garden show from last weekend. So Brock had a mystery opponent. They threw it into storyline on television, and there was a Twitter hashtag going that night, WWE MSG. Yeah. And I kept on kind of refreshing it. Everybody was going apeshit. People convinced themselves that the mystery opponent was Cody Rhodes. People actually convinced themselves of this. And when it turned out to be Austin Theory, there were people by the hundreds shitting all over the fact that it wasn't Cody Rhodes. When it was never promoted, like they just conjured this up in their heads. And so the first thing I want to do is I want to ask you, Josh, can you ever remember a situation, maybe it was an Impact, maybe it was something with you, where fans got worked up about something that they kind of conjured up that was never promoted and then got angry when it didn't happen? I know that might be a tough thing to answer, but
yeah, off the top of my head, I'm drawing a blank. Maybe me going to AEW would be the closest thing. So
there
far.
You go. I mean, everybody thought that right there, they were like, for sure, he's leaving. He's going to AEW. I mean, obviously I know that they had to clear that line with Ethan Page because they're going to make sure it's not going to upset him or anything, but everybody thought for sure, oh, well, they got him. Signed, sealed, delivered. There we go. Because that was around the time that the angle was going as well. But, I mean, to people's credit. So I started to get word Saturday. They're like, something's up at MSG. And I'm like, all right, I'll dig around. They put Brock Lesnar versus TBD. And they referenced him losing the title numerous times on television. Paul Heyman did. And they were working the talent. They were working the staff. They switched refs off some matches. They switched producers off some matches. They moved Brock's match from before the intermission to the main event with TBD still listed. They had brought in people to that show that weren't booked on the show. It was very, very weird. And then it was Austin Theory. And I was like, well, shit, now I got to post some like news that people actually care about because we got a ton of people that subscribed. And they were like, oh, man. So I was like, all right, Jeff Hardy's going to AEW. Swerve's going to AEW. And fortunately, they were satisfied. But like, I was looking at that and I was like, damn, it's not just going to piss off like WWE's people. It's going to piss off people who subscribe to us thinking like John Cena was going to walk out there and hit an attitude adjustment and pin Brock Lesnar for the title. You know what I mean? So that was.
Was it from what you've heard, was it Theory the whole time?
Theory was one of the first names that I heard, but much like Steve Austin returning and CM Punk coming back to wrestling, I said, get the hell out of here.
Yeah,
all due respect to Austin Theory, main eventing MSG. I mean, great.
Oh yeah, good for him.
Brock can main event MSG against a broomstick and beat the shit out of it. And I would be happy. I would love to watch it. But
the only thing I will say is if any fan bought a ticket for that show because they bought into the promo work on television,
yeah,
thinking it was going to be a big name, I could see them being pissed when Austin Theory walks out. But if they convinced themselves it was Cody Rhodes, tough shit. Like, no, that was never even hinted.
Yeah, there's no indication it was Cody Rhodes
right,
for sure.
Right.
Heard from him today, by the way. But Ryan Lambert says, love seeing Josh grow as a talent from his early AAW stints. Keep up the amazing work, Josh. How about that? Getting praise all over the place. One of the best in the world. Well, guys, we are about to wrap up this portion of the show. We do have our post show over on FightfulSelect.com. I have no clue what we're talking about over there. Jimmy doesn't prep me whatsoever.
No, you were talking about magazines earlier, Josh. Here's our magazine. This is a cheap plug.
Oh, here, I can hold it up.
Yeah, nicely. There's our magazine since he was talking about magazines. There you go. Oh, man. There you go. We're going to do a story on you in a future edition. How's that? Next one's coming out April 1st, by the way.
April 1st. I should probably write my article then, shouldn't I?
I've only been waiting for about 2 weeks, Sean.
Are you been much busy, writing, Jimmy?
I have written a few things in the past. I think I might have reached out to SRS over here.
Yeah, we've had some conversations.
Really?
I have yet to find a topic that.
Really okay, we're going to talk then. I'll have you because we do a thing called the Wrestler's Tribune written by wrestlers.
Yeah, Jordan just wrote one, didn't she?
Yeah, or no, she did another one. Cody wrote for us, Cody Diener.
Cody Diener, Matt Cardona, Shaza McKenzie,
EC3.
EC3.
Cool.
Yeah. So now that I know you like to write, I will hit you up. You can keep that, by the way.
All right.
Oh, man, lucky you. A parting gift. Yeah. A parting gift.
He's going to show that off to everybody, Sean.
He is. He's just going to walk down the streets of Toronto and waving be like, it. Waving my it. Day is made. A reminder, guys, watch Impact Wrestling every Thursday evening on Access. There are a million ways to watch it now. You can watch it by subscribing to their YouTube as well. Josh Alexander is an integral figure on that show. Josh, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, man, anytime. This is cool.
Until next time, guys. We're out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.